Blog Talk Radio.
On January 14, 1988, USA Today published an article that had a headline that said, "Woman Won't Vacate Motel Where Reverend King Was Slain." And within the article, it read, "A longtime resident of the Memphis motel where Reverend Martin Luther King Jr. was slain said Wednesday she'll defy an order to move, even though it's slated to become a civil rights museum." Jacqueline Smith, who now has no phone or heat, has lived at the Lorraine Motel since her teens. She says she won't go willingly. Other tenants moved out Monday. "Dr. King would have wanted me to stay here. He said he didn't want any memorial, that he wanted to help the poor," Smith said. "That's what he died doing." Today I'm talking about the National Civil Rights Museum and the Lorraine Hotel. Listen up. Hello, everyone, and thank you for joining tonight. This is LSEC Publishing Radio. I am your host, Teresa Banks, and as I stated during the intro, I'm talking tonight about the National Civil Rights Museum and the Lorraine Hotel, and I believe my spouse, Todd, is actually now on the line. Do we have you here on board, Todd?
That is me.
Okay, well, welcome aboard. So, listening audience, you are truly in for a double dose treat tonight. Now, both the Civil Rights Museum and the Lorraine Hotel are located in Memphis, Tennessee, at the site where Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. was assassinated on April 4th in 1968. And a part of tonight's subject matter includes addressing whether or not it is appropriate for millions of dollars to be raised to erect structures and monuments in honor of Dr. King instead of using those funds for actually the people that he served. Now, just a quick point of note, on July 27th of this year, I sent an email to a representative of the Civil Rights Museum, or I should say the official name, the National Civil Rights Museum. I also sent an email to Reverend Samuel Billy Kiles, and I will get into who he is and a little bit about him shortly, and to Jacqueline Smith, who is the very last resident who was evicted from the Lorraine Hotel. And I invited all three to be a guest of the show or to listen in. None of them replied, but hopefully one, if not all, will be listening to the show tonight. Now, just a little background information, and then I'll ask Todd if he wants to chime in here in just a bit. Todd and I were both visiting Tunica, Mississippi at the end of July, and we came across an article in one of their visitor guides that talked about going over to Memphis, Tennessee, and we decided to make the drive over. And in regards to the Lorraine Hotel, it happens to be one of the few hotels that was available back in the 1960s that blacks could actually stop at and know that they would be accepted to stay in overnight. And in regards to the National Civil Rights Museum, it was opened on September 28th in 1991, and it's reported to have had over 3 million visitors since that particular time. Now, before I give you some detail in regards to my personal input on the museum and in visiting the museum, I'm going to lend the floor over here to Todd to get his feedback. Todd, what did you think when we went to visit the site of the museum as well as the hotel? What was your impression of the visit?
My initial first impression was, here we are again in another cheesy type of environment to just do anything to create money. But then I had a chance to look inside. I had a chance to see the effect it had on the visitor. I had a chance to see remnants of people who have passed, who were famous, and those who had no fame whatsoever. And I thought, you know what? This was actually something that was worth an individual to see. Now, surely you are here tonight, ladies and gentlemen, a very good argument on how money could have been properly used as far as honoring Dr. King. I believe that what was done, and despite what the Lorraine Motel once was a fine way to memorialize the legacy of someone who has given so much to so many people. So I guess that would be my beginning of my beginning of how I feel about the whole subject matter. Now, Teresa, I did have the pleasure of also witnessing you interact with the last resident, as you said, Ms. Jacqueline. And we saw her before we had a chance to enter the campus of the museum. And I'm asking you now, like I'm asking you then, what about her and her whole presentation that draw you in to speak to her?
Well, I think that that's an outstanding question, and I want to first give the audience just a little background information, and I think Todd's given great insight already. What he's currently referring to is that once we arrived at the site, at the museum and at the hotel, my very first reaction was not to actually the site itself, but to a woman that I saw after we pulled up that was across the street. And at the time, I didn't know her name. I didn't know anything about her or her purpose, but I noticed that she was setting up shop. And what I mean by setting up shop is that she had a table placed out there. She had a tarp and other things that she was putting out there. And I remember thinking, well, I need to talk to this lady. Before or after, I was kind of thinking which it would be, and I decided to do it after our visit to the site. But I definitely wanted to touch base with her because I was really curious on why she was there and if she was selling something of interest and that I thought I should purchase and support. I figured I probably would. Now, just to give a little general feedback more about the museum itself and in talking with Jacqueline, before I pull Todd back here into the conversation, I want to say that in going to the site, it was truly breathtaking. I mean, you walk up there and you are faced with this whole revitalization of them remodeling this hotel, and you have a couple of vehicles that are sitting out front that look like they did back in the day. You are staring, at least I was, at the landing of where Dr. King was actually assassinated. And then once you go into the museum, as Todd and I did, you are almost overdosed with the amount of information that you are given and historical facts. When we went into the museum, for example, we watched an outstanding movie called The Witness, where Reverend Samuel Billy Kiles was describing his days and his experience with Dr. King. And he talked, for example, about Dr. King's last days, and he said also that Dr. King almost did not give that famous mountaintop speech. He was talking about how Dr. King was headed there to the church. The weather was so bad, he figured no one would be there, and that Reverend Kyle said that his group had to actually call Dr. King and say, hey, these people are at the church. They're waiting for you. You need to come and speak. And as we know, Dr. King delivered a powerful message that day, but Reverend Kyle said it was amongst hearing all these strange noises, like loud banging shutters. And then, of course, as we know, Dr. King passed away the following day, and Reverend Kiles mentioned that what was amazing to him, and even still today, is as he looks back on pictures, he sees that Dr. King obviously did not age since he was assassinated, but, of course, the rest of them in that group did. A couple of other things I want to mention before Todd and I continue to converse here is that as we walked further into the museum, we were truly bearing witness to a lot of history. There was a lot in regards to the civil rights movement, all of these 3D effect type figures and life human size sculptures, all of these details, all of these things to review and read. There were headsets you could purchase and listen to the narration of various things as you walk through the museum. So we saw almost come to life what the integration of the schools was like, the impact of the KKK on the various movements, the bus boycotts, and we could actually walk through a bus there at the museum and literally see this figure of Rosa Parks sitting there. And one thing that really amazed me in regards to walking through that bus is it reminded me back in the day in the 70s with these big old wide bench green seats and listening to the story of Rosa. And one thing I didn't remember being taught in school is that a black person not only had to relinquish their seat to a white person, but they had to relinquish the row. And I could not remember that from history. I knew that if a white person came on, they wanted that seat, they claimed that seat, and it was theirs. But I didn't know that it was so scandalous in that day in regards to racism that they didn't even want to sit on the same row and that black people had to clear off that row. We saw images of the sanitation workers and the trucks that were there, the gentlemen that had been protesting, and the I am a man signs that they had over them. And we also learned that they stopped carrying those signs using sticks because the individuals that were prejudiced against them would actually use those sticks to beat them with, so they actually had to put the signage around their neck in order to go forward. And then finally, before, again, Todd and I continue to talk here about our experience and further discussion in regards to the funds versus how they should be used, we went across the street from the museum and the hotel to visit an additional portion of the whole museum piece where you have the opportunity to read and learn more about the investigation into the killing and the assassination of Dr. King as far as James Earl Jones was concerned and the rifle that he used. I mean, we even saw his underwear that was behind the glass. We saw the bathroom kind of reenacted and the whole scene there and the whole layout of it. And it was really amazing to see all of that and to see how they even brought the civil rights movement up to today into the picture. And then we grabbed a few souvenirs that were inside of the store. And then I say all of this to lead now back, circle back to the piece where Todd left off on was with the conversation now with Jacqueline. We came outside after getting the souvenirs. And then now we walk over to Jacqueline, and I'm talking with her. Todd is seated in the vehicle that we had driven there in, and I'm talking to Jacqueline. And, Todd, you're now reconnected here to the line. I mean, you remember me standing at the table and us having this long conversation together. And I learned that she was against the restoration of this hotel. And as of today, she has now been there 23 years, 8 months, and 12 days. And she gave a number of different articles. I read the one initially in regards to USA Today. I want to read the second one, and then, again, I want to continue my talk here with my spouse, Todd, in regards to this matter. And one of the second articles she handed to me has the headline, "Woman Evicted from Site of King Slaying." And it says, "Jacqueline Smith carried sobbing from the Lorraine Motel on Wednesday, vows to press on with her quixotic 2-month fight, sitting in a straight-back chair on the sidewalk amid her rain-soaked belongings." Smith said she'd sue the state to prevent renovation of the motel where Reverend Martin Luther King Jr. was slain. "I have no place to go," said Smith, who lived at the Lorraine for 11 years. "Tennessee wants to spend $8.8 million to remake the motel into a civil rights museum. Smith wants the motel used as housing for the homeless. This is wrong. You people are making a mistake," Smith yelled as she was put out of her room and onto the street. When deputies arrived to evict her, Smith refused to open her door. Police pleaded with her to leave on her own. "We are just doing our job," shouted Shelby County Sheriff Aide Randy Wade, as deputies forced open the door. Other tenants left under a state order January 11th. The state built a 6-foot-high chain-link fence around the motel. Smith stayed even after the electricity and phone were disconnected. Friends delivered meals, and she cooked cans of beans on the steam radiator. Now, Todd, one thing she was sharing is that there was an event that was held there in the front of the hotel and the museum, the Samstown River Arts Fest event, where partygoers and belly dancers were there. And she was questioning why people were in support of this hotel and this museum. And you were just talking about how you felt it was worthy of a visit. I mean, what do you think in regards to millions of dollars, over $8 million being spent to restore that, as opposed to, as she said, helping the poor?
Well, you have to realize that her argument has a few flaws in it, and I'll try to tag on them as I go along. The $8.8 million was spent to build the museum. The museum, I would believe, has generated more than $8 million for the community at hand. How can I say that? Fine, I can say it this way. That museum is being visited by people from all over the world. They are bringing their tourist dollars. They are spending their tourist dollars in the community, in restaurants, in hotels, and that money is being an economic boon to the community at large, if not the city at large. For anyone to see otherwise is because they may have something going on in their agenda that has nothing to do with the premise of helping the community at hand. Martin Luther King was one who argued that he didn't believe that any one person should have an advantage over anyone else. We all start at the same level, and your own self-determination determines whether or not you succeed or fail. That museum provides not only that message, but it also shows that action by people in the community, given an even playing field. You have millions of people coming through with their tourist dollars. If you are homeless, chances are there is nothing wrong with you taking an initiative and trying to start a small little business. Now, I've heard people say, we know if you're conservative leaning, if you're homeless, how can you start a business? You know what? I see people every day who come from other countries who are not only homeless, but they have no strong command of the English language. Yet and still, with what little lint and fuzz they have in their pocket, they are willing to start if it's no more than shining shoes, if it's no more than taking in laundry, if it's no more than working in the back kitchens of the restaurants that are thriving due to the museum, in order to make their stand, in order to live the American dream, in order to do what Dr. King said, everyone being placed on a level playing field, and your own self-determination determines whether you will rise or fall. I believe that Jackie, in all of her passion, knew nothing else but to sit in a motel, because I believe in her own self-determination, whether she will admit it or not, she too benefited from that museum because of all the tourist dollars that come through and all the donations that I'm quite sure she has received in her efforts to protest the museum. I am quite sure that in all of her efforts, the press and the notoriety that she has received, whether it be grand or minuscule, due to that museum, shows that even she is living the King dream, which is her own self-determination, is determining how she does.
Well, I know something else I'd like you to comment on, because she certainly mentioned something else in regards to, you know, we're doing all these things. We have streets named after Dr. King. We have monuments like the one just built in D.C., $120 million spent on that. And she also said, hey, you know, in regards to someone like an Elvis Presley, there's just one Graceland. And although there may be other buildings and structures and all that, but people are still spending way too much money. And what I'd like you to comment on is something that we talked at great length about at an IHOP, an International House of Pancakes, the other day. And you mentioned, it was kind of similar to what you said here, but you talked in great detail about it, and it was in regards to an anchor for the community. Can you elaborate more on that here?
Well, the analogy I gave is the only way you can have a harbor full of ships is one little house is anchored in that harbor for all other ships to follow. For those of you who are familiar with Chicago, the west side of Chicago up until 1989 was poverty-stricken, riddled with drugs, gangs, and prostitution. And back then, a semi-known celebrity by the name of Oprah Winfrey decided she was going to build on the west side of Chicago. Everybody told her she was nuts. They said, you are putting yourself at risk. Do you realize what is going on over there? They will steal everything you have within a week. That was back in 1989.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in 2011, the west side of Chicago, where Oprah Winfrey built and developed her Oprah Winfrey studio, is more than thriving. At one time, there was nothing but poverty and drugs. Now, it is high-end condos and high-end restaurants, where there were once more police per block than it was anyplace else. Now there are more businesses than there are people. So that little studio was an anchor for the community. It built and it thrived around that anchor so that the business can come, so that the poor neighborhood that it was no longer had to have all of the garden variety crime that comes with having a poor neighborhood. It now became a thriving neighborhood. Now, let's put this on line with the Lorraine Motel. I had a chance to see the neighborhood, so I'm quite sure before the museum was there, that neighborhood was most likely just as poverty-stricken. It probably had a lot of the garden variety crime that comes with having a poor neighborhood. I'm quite sure the police presence that was there before they built that museum was higher than most other places in Memphis, because that is sometimes the unfortunate thing that happens when you have a poor neighborhood. You have people who are desperate, people who are hungry, people who are homeless, people who are without inspiration, feeding off of each other and anyone who enters that neighborhood. But we look at that same neighborhood today with that museum. There are thriving businesses there.
Mm-hmm.
There are repaired streets. There are repaired sidewalks. There are fresh new paint and buildings all around this new museum. So that neighborhood is being fed, is being breathed life into a once poor community now looking bright. Now, as far as all the other monuments that are in the country, I'm quite sure anyone who's been down Martin Luther King Drive will say, you know what, that can be a dangerous place to be. I'm quite sure who's seen these monuments in any other cities could say, yeah, the community it's in may not be the best community for it, but I tell you what, the people in that community are what makes the difference. They are the ones who sometimes, well, I would say most times, can determine how they rise and how they fall by how they do what they have been given. What they do by what they've been given, I should say. So,
well, I tell you, those are words very well said, and as I pause you here for just a second, Todd, with about 3 minutes left, I just want to give my quick 2 cents on this and give you a quick wrap-up as well. You know, I think to Jacqueline's defense, I certainly believe that the money should have been spent more on the people, but I'm caught in the middle. I feel more on the people, but at the same time, some funds should still be spent on the monuments and the structures. And Todd, did you have a quick wrap-up here? We have about 2.5 minutes that are left that you wanted to summarize with.
Yes, here's a quick wrap-up. Main point number one, I believe that Jacqueline, although she had a passionate argument, was very misled and selfish simply because if she's living somewhere now. If she's homeless, understood, but she's living somewhere now. And wherever that is, I hope it's fresh and warm, whatever. Number two, you can only spend money when you have a purpose, when you have an anchor, and it has to build. If you just throw money blindly to anybody, poor, to the sick, it will just be misused and abused and not given true effort. You have to talk with the people, find out their needs, and then make a plan, and then put in the money. That's how things thrive. And
all right. Well, Todd, I am so grateful, honey, for you to dial in here tonight. I have about a minute and 15 seconds left. So I just want to give some final feedback here to folks. Now, to Jacqueline's defense, she was not here tonight, nor anyone from the museum or Reverend Kyle's. So just to her defense, I want to say that I do applaud her efforts, not only as a strong woman, but definitely as a protester and standing up for what she believes in and hanging in there. And I wish her all the best, and I will certainly keep her in my prayers. And as I wrap up here tonight, I want to thank you all for listening. Please don't hesitate to drop me an email at mailtobanks@aol.com with your feedback, your questions, your comments with this program or any of them. It's spelled M-A-I-L, the number 2, B as in boy, A-N-K-S, at aol.com. on the internet. You can find me on MySpace and Facebook. Become a friend or a follower of the show by going to blogtalkradio.com/ellasec. It's spelled E-L-L-A-C-E-C. And the holidays are coming up quick. Don't forget to swing by Amazon.com and pick up a copy of Woman of Integrity, Barrenhood, Becoming a Published Author, or Surviving a Layoff. All four of my titles are those names. And then, coming up on October 1st, you can meet me live and in person and have all four of your copies of my books signed. If you don't have them yet, you can pick them up there on October 1st. I will be at 95th and Halsted at the Woodson Library, and I will be signing books, autographing books, and I will be participating in an author's panel to answer questions. I want to thank my wonderful spouse, Todd Banks, for not only tuning in tonight but speaking. I want to thank again all of you listeners for dialing in and, again, for your feedback, your emails, everything. I appreciate you. Todd, I love you, and I thank you again for all that you do day in, day out to be a supportive spouse. And to everyone listening, take care of yourself. God bless. And keep on top of the show.